Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. Tonight with us, me, Alan Snails. On tonight's program, I speak again with Chung Yu, an athletic Chinese guy from Hong Kong. Chung Yu has not only recently completed his second bungee jump, but in June this year, he spent his vacation time working as a support roadie for the AIDS Life Cycle Ride to End AIDS. It's a seven-day bicycle ride from San Francisco to Los Angeles. Chung Yu will discuss his experiences during that project and explains why he'll be going back again next year. So I've got another interesting discussion coming up tonight on Orange Ribbon. Please stay with me for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Welcome to Orange Ribbon, tonight with just me, Alan Smales. And it's good to be back in the studio again, having been away for the past 4 weeks almost. So, and thanks to Hugh and Kafam, who've kept the program going while I've been away. Regular listeners will know that I have just spent the past month in Hong Kong again, one of my most favourite cities in the world. As always, I try to meet up with local LGBT people for a recorded chat that I can use here on Orange Ribbon at some stage in the future. Around this time last year, I recorded an interview in Hong Kong with Chung Yu, a friendly, happy, outgoing and athletic Chinese guy in Hong Kong. As a reminder, you may recall that he had been training to become a Christian minister, but got dismissed from the Bible college he was studying at just 3 weeks before graduation, when he was forced out of the gay closet when his Bible college roommate discovered that he was gay. And also, at the time of our chat last year, he had just completed his first ever bungee jump from the top of the Macau Tower, Macau being the former Portuguese colony about an hour's ferry ride from Hong Kong. Things have since moved on for Chung Yu, and one of the main topics I wish to discuss with him on my latest visit back to Hong Kong last month was his trip to California back in June to be part of the annual AIDS Life Cycle Ride to End AIDS. But there were a couple of other life events for Chung Yu this year. Firstly, he celebrated reaching the official middle age milestone, and as part of that celebration, he was given a special birthday gift by some friends to do a second bungee jump from the Macau Tower, something he told me last year he wished to do again, backwards this time. So I started out by asking Chung Yu, why do a second bungee jump anyway?
Primarily, it was the two friends of mine want to buy me a birthday gift, and they thought that if I wanted to do bungee jump again, they will pay for the fee. So
what is the fee, by the way?
It was the second time. It is cheaper, and so it's $600 for the jump.
That's about a bit under $100 Australian. It's still quite expensive.
Mm. Yeah.
So, okay, so this was a birthday present. Now, you did indicate last year when we chatted that you were going to looking at doing this again and that you were talking about doing it backwards. Well, you did do it. Why? What was this fascination about doing it backwards?
Well, I thought that even in general, most people do not have many experience in falling backward and not knowing what's going to happen. So I thought that that should be a sensational feeling too. But then because I did it the first time facing forward, and it was not challenging enough, so I thought I would do something different. So I did the backward, and I did it.
What was the feeling like doing it backwards? Because obviously the first time you're facing a whole lot of fears, I guess, even just going forwards. But you sort of know the general experience, I suppose, but doing it backwards, was it different?
It was different in a way that, like, technically you cannot see what you are, facing. So you're looking at the sky, and so basically the first half of the jump was you only see the sky, like, kind of turning a little bit around, and that's all. And because I happened to not have much fear falling backward like freely. So, and plus, later on I realized that because I followed the instructions of the instructors, that I would raise my head and make sure that my body is straightened, and so it turned out that my gesture was really beautiful in the pictures and in.
Well, you had your arms out.
Yeah,
I saw the photos and the video, and you almost crossed like as you went down.
Flying.
Quite impressive.
Yes.
So, do you think you'll ever do it again?
Oh yes,
you will.
Yeah, because the Macau Tower people told me that they have one more way to do it, which is really challenging. Is that normally they will have the feet, the ankles tied to also to the string, but this
it is more than string, isn't it?
It's a cable thing, but the third way to do it is that they will only tie a rope or something, safety rope to the body, and nothing is tied up. So you're going to be falling down quite freely with the limbs moving around. And that's, so I'm going to try that next August. So you should come back, so you can ask me about that.
An annual event. What happens at the end, by the way? You obviously do a few bounces,
yeah,
and until you finally stabilize and come still. Presumably they've got some mechanism that lower you down.
That's correct.
The other thing that bothers me, and given my size, I guess, I presume they must do some weight calculation as well, because obviously different people are going to go different distances. I'd be fearful that they did a miscalculation or something.
Well, you don't think about that.
Well, I would.
so because you don't think about that. Oh, well, they actually have, I think, three different kinds of rope that would handle three different range of people, or with different weights. So, so you see them pulling up the correct one, and getting prepared and blah, blah. So they do. They do have to weight me or people twice before you get to the platform, so they know your weight, and then they'll pick the right rope and or
elastic band,
yeah,
or whatever
band
it is
they call it. So.
So you're going to do it again. It's going to be almost an annual event. But what attracts you to doing it?
Well, I think. First thing is because it's not something that many people would do, would even think about doing, and so I like the fact that it's not something that's usual. I mean, many people have done it before. I mean, they've done it, which I have not met yet. But it's and the second thing is because I like speed, and I mean I don't have much experience in car racing or event, like X game, stuff like that. But I do enjoy the speed when I was falling down freely from 233 meters high, and I like that. I mean, I like the feeling of almost like I'm flying, almost. So, and a friend told me that. He had done the skydiving, and it wasn't that bad. So I think that will be the next, well, other than the bungee jump, with my next goal to do skydiving. That has a, I don't know how to call it, a trainer, like wrapped with you on the back. So at least if anything happened, it will happen with somebody else.
Well, I'm glad it's you and not me. I'm afraid I would only leap out of an aeroplane if it was obviously going to crash and there was no other way. Anyway, I'm in Hong Kong. This is Alan Smales, and I'm speaking to Chong Yu.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
This is Alice Males in Hong Kong, and my guest today is Chong Yu, and we've had enough of bungee jumping now. The main reason I wanted to talk to you was that just recently, back in June, I think it was, you went to the US for their annual AIDS bike ride, I think it's called. A little bit of background. Tell us, in general terms, what is it all about? What is this bike ride about? How long has it been going? What's it trying to achieve, and so on?
First of all, the official name is AIDS Life Cycle, and I don't know much about the history, but I think they have been doing this for about 19 years. Primarily, some people in San Francisco started a ride to raise funds for AIDS prevention or AIDS medications to support the people, and then they changed the name into the current name, I think about 9 years ago. And so basically it's a fundraising event. And now the LA Gay and Lesbian Organization is in the joint force. So now there are two organizations organizing the ride and raising money for both of them. And so there are people from San Francisco and LA primarily. But also there are a few people from outside U.S. like me, and
there's were one, there many. Were there many outside from outside the U.S.?
I would say about 10, maybe less than 10, because I only met one guy from Belgium, and that's all I know that they're from. Maybe one other guy from France too, but most of them are within the United States. Well, I should say primarily they're from within the United States, even for the riders and volunteer.
Why did you get interested in this, or how did you first learn about it?
I first learned about it from a friend who has been doing volunteer work for the event, and he's a very good friend of mine, and I think about 4 years ago he started talking about this online, or when he came to Hong Kong with dinner, and he always talked about, you know, talking me into this, saying you should do this because it's really fascinating. And I planned to do it last time, but I couldn't like arrange the holiday and the funding thing. So I eventually did it. So basically, it was a friend who talked me into this, to do this. But then this time, when I decided to do it, I have a few other personal reasons, and they're very personal. I really got tired of Hong Kong, so I really need to get out of Hong Kong for a week or two. Plus, I like the United States as a country a lot, and I know many people wouldn't share the feeling, but every time when I go to the United States, I feel like I've gone home. It's quite, you know, kind of exaggerating, but it's really, that's the kind of feeling that I have. So I miss the country, because last time I was there was 3 years ago, and it was already too long for me to be not in the United States even for a week or two. So I have some other, you know, personal reason, and then I thought if I can raise money when I'm like doing it for my personal reason, it's not too bad. And I actually raised close to $3,000 for the organization in San Francisco.
Now, in terms of raising money, you on this occasion was working as a roadie, if you like, volunteering, if you like, behind the scenes, not actually doing the ride itself. But you were telling me off air that those who want to do the ride, there is a minimum fundraising requirement, otherwise they can't even take part.
Yeah, $3,000 at least.
And on this occasion there were what, some 2,000 riders?
2,200.
So as an absolute minimum, they're guaranteed of raising $6 million, but you were saying this year it was...
$10 million.
So, and of course, whilst volunteers are not obliged to have to raise money, you did, and presumably some of the others did as well.
Yes.
Now, how many volunteers, roughly, are involved in organising 2,300 riders?
There are at least 500 roadies like me in the event. So, plus there are about, I would say, 50 staff, full-time staff. So, and then occasionally there will be volunteers from the local town or the local city. So we're talking about 600 volunteers to make it happen.
Now, this ride has been going for a number of years, and you've indicated off-air that the route changes a little bit, but basically it's from San Francisco to LA, is that right? Over a period of how many days?
7 days.
It is not a race. There is no competition in that regard. It's more of just a social ride, so they're not out to beat each other or anything like that.
Yes.
Now, this time you volunteered as a roadie, if you like. Was that to just get the feel, the wind, so to speak, to get a feel for how it operated? Because you're talking about going back next year and actually riding, but why did you select to be a roadie this year?
I think primarily because as a roadie, you don't really have to train before the event. And because I know that people, I mean, you know, normally if you are riding, you're planning to ride 500 miles, that would be like 600 kilometers.
Then more than
you want to train, you know, for a while so you can actually be fit, fit for that. So as a roadie, you don't have to train. You just have to, like, prepare psychologically or financially, but that's all. And like me, who actually raised fund, I have to start early, too. I mean, on the fundraising procedure. And so if you do not even raise funds, then all you need to do is just, you know, prepare and go. And then, so...
But you're saying there's no training if you're a roadie, but it must be fairly heavy work. Nevertheless, you're doing a lot of strenuous work.
When I say there's no training, that's true for roadies. But the local people who join as a roadie, they actually have many orientations and training to go to if they're local. Say, if they live in San Francisco, there are a number of orientation, briefing, or even just get together to know each other before the event. So they have something like that in advance in a local area. But for somebody like me who cannot go to those meetings, so I cannot do anything as a preparation, so to speak.
So you arrived how long before this start? Did you have any time in the US before it actually started?
I had about 3 days, because I think primarily because I want to, like, have a little reunion with some friends, and then also because I needed to be there 1 day in advance to the orientation day. That will be the official orientation day. And so I thought that I should be there 3 days before that. I have two full days to, you know, chill out and get over the jet lag. And then I also spent 2 days in L.A. after the event, just because, you know, that's my home.
So did you mentioned that you were there because of a friend, so obviously you already knew one or two or three or so people, but did you find there were other people that you maybe had knew or had encountered in the past as well, or you ended up the whole tour you're only knowing a very few people?
Well, I have talked to two other friends online for maybe a year or two, and then I also learned that they were doing the volunteer and also the riding. So one of them was a roadie also, and one other friend that I know, whom I've not met in person, was a rider. So it was fun to actually meet them in person. I mean, you know, and we felt like really good friends, but we actually haven't met until June. But I met some friends, new friends in the ride, because as a bike parking person, that's my team, bike parking, we have to greet people out and greet people in. So I basically would say hi to them. I help them out every day. So I happened to make some friends
I'm Rick Drippin. I'm Alan Smales, and I'm speaking to Chong Yu in Hong Kong.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
This is Alan Smales. I'm in Hong Kong. And I'm speaking with Chong Yu, who has recently returned from the US, having taken part in this rather large to more than 2,000 bike riders raising funds for AIDS activities in the US. Now, you were part of the parking team, and you were saying you were greeting people when they come in of an evening and no doubt waving to them when they leave in the morning. But that's not really the main part of your job. I mean, there's a lot of physical effort. What was a typical day like for you as part of the bike parking team?
Thank you for asking. Yes, the basic job of a bike parker is we set up the parking racks every day for them before they arrive. And then the next day when they're riding out, or I should say after they're rode out, then we'll have to take them down and transport them to the next camp before they arrive. So there are a lot of physical work too. Plus, we also would hand out the route. They call it the route sheet, which is the map and the distance and all the information that they need for the riders every day in the morning. So that's another job. And also, sometimes we actually have to help them park, because some of them, when they come in, they're really exhausted and they don't care about parking. And we don't want them to not care about parking, because we don't want to set up too many racks just because they want to park their bike loosely. So we'll assist them when we need to. So that's pretty much our job.
I'm just thinking, 2,300 bike riders or whatever, the parking racks for that number is must take up a fair amount of space. Where would you normally set up? I mean, was it sort of some sort of a park or some sort of sports ground? Where would you normally set up each night?
You just named them, because there are some camp that is country park, so we will park them on the grass land, or one camp is a school, so they actually have a sport ground that we can park set up the racks. And one camp is sort of a resort place by the beach, so we park them at a parking lot behind the beach. So, and on the last day, I do not actually know what that area is, so it's another grassland. So we set up all the racks in those places.
Now, we're just talking about the bike parking team, but of course there's 500 roughly support team members. Give us an idea of some of the other roles that were involved, or those 500 people were involved in.
Sure. There is a massage team, there is a chiropractor team, as a medical team, and also, as you can expect, it's the lunch team, the breakfast team, and the dinner team. They're all different. And there's also, I think there are two teams that are on the road most of the time, and for the safety and for the planning of the route. So, and then there are also one team that it's to transport all people's luggages from one camp to another camp, and that's the job. So they're driving trucks, loading their luggages, unloading the luggages, and setting up. Well, they don't have to set up the camp. I mean, they're camping site first, so we do our own setting up the tent and everything. But they have to transport all the luggages every day for everybody.
You mentioned tents. I mean, with 20, close to 2,500 people when you take into account the support teams. How many tents were you setting up? Do you have to set up the tents as well?
Well, I mean, I have to set up my own tent.
Oh, each person sets up their own tent?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you didn't have to set up tents for everybody then?
No, no, no.
Oh, okay.
Thank God.
What about the accidents and that sort of thing? You mentioned a medical team. Were there any, your experience this time, were there any serious accidents or people having vehicle collisions or something like that?
There is one accident that I knew of. There was one guy was hit by a vehicle on the road, and he was able to walk, but he looked like he was obviously injured by the elbows and the face, and so he had to cannot ride for the whole ride. But he had to go with the team because he's on the road. So he comes in, he goes out, but only by a vehicle. And he was hurt quite badly for a ride like that. But he was okay, I think, eventually.
Now, you must have had a fairly long day. We didn't exactly get to the bottom of it before. You would be starting fairly early in the morning, because I think you were telling me off air that the riders would start out at, what, 6.30, between 6.30 and 8, which means presumably some of the crew's got to be up well before 6.30, so, and presumably yourself. So it must have been a long day. What's a typical day like then?
Okay, usually I wake up around 4 o'clock.
Oh, God.
And then when I woke up, the breakfast team were already working, as you can imagine. So they probably woke up around 3, 2.30, and so my routine is I got up at 4 o'clock, and then I pack my tents and luggages, bring it back to the truck, and then I have breakfast, and there are already people lining up for the breakfast. But as a roadie, we can cut the line, so officially we can cut the line, so I don't have to do that in the morning, I mean line up. And then I start work around 5:45. And because we have to open the fence, because in the evening we have to have security guarding the bike and each camp. So in the morning we have to kind of unguard them in a way. So we have to be there quite early to make sure that they are ready to go. And so, like you said, the early rider would ride out around 6:30. And until 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock is the last time that they can ride out. So right after that, we'll start taking down the racks and pack them, bring them to the truck, and then we'll go to the next camp.
And you were telling me off air that you would normally take a short route way to the next camp.
Yes.
Because obviously you've got to get there before everybody else to do all your thing.
Well,
again,
we might think so, but there are about 10, 15, 20 riders. They usually arrive before we did.
Well, actually, let's very briefly discuss. We'll talk about that in the next segment, about the different mix of riders. This is Orange Ribbon. I'm Alan Smales, and I'm speaking to Chung Yu in Hong Kong.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
This is Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and I'm talking to Chung Yu about the bike ride in the US in June. The different types of people that took part. It seems that there was a wide variety of shapes, sizes, races, ages, and whatever. Give us some idea.
Okay, physically, there are big people, small people, and age-wise, there are really young people and really old people. And in terms of sexual orientation, there are actually a lot of straight people who are in the event supporting or raising funds, and which is really nice. And so there are about 100 people, riders, who are HIV positive. So they'll be wearing jerseys that says they're positive. And there are also people in the volunteer team that are also positive and will be wearing T-shirts like that. So there are really, it's like an international world. quite because the Asians and Caucasians, Africans, Americans, and Europeans. I mean, it's like that, like a melting pot.
You mentioned one guy who I think you called the Chicken Man. Tell us about this Chicken Man.
Oh, the story that I heard was that, first of all, he wears the same outfit every day, every year. Well, mostly red. Red outfit with the helmet with a chicken on the helmet. Like a really big chicken, not small one. And then he always wears sunglasses, so I've never seen his eyes yet. And another part of the story was people told me that he had a stroke, quite a severe one, about 2 years before the event that I was in. And he actually recovered and went back to the event again. So many people, like I said to you earlier, that really respect him because he was just really into the whole event, no matter what. So,
what about weather? I think you mentioned there was a cancellation on one occasion, a 1 day's cancellation. What did that do to the organization? How did that affect everybody?
Except that day, the rest of the 6 days are quite sunny and very hot. But that day, somehow, we had a rainstorm. So eventually, they had to cancel the ride and close the route. And then, so consequently, that we have to bring all the riders from one camp to another camp with buses and coaches. And we're lucky that we have local buses to help us, I mean school bus. And for the bicycle, because they are not riding, so we have to ship 2,000 bikes that day from one camp to another camp. And it was a lot of work. We started doing the transportations from around 10, 11 o'clock. And we didn't finish the last bike until 7:30. And then we had to still go to the next camp to park them. So when I got there, it was around 9 o'clock. And so we had to still set up the racks and park the bikes. And because they're not riding, they were not riding, so they didn't park their own bike. So we parked them for them. So we had to think of a system to make sure that the next day when the rider comes in, that they can find the bike. So we have to work at least 2 more hours on the system before we can go to bed. So I went to bed around 10:30. Well, I finished work around 10:30, but I went to bed around 11:30. But I think some of our team finished work around midnight. And then we had to wake up around 4 o'clock the next day. And then we didn't finish the last day until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So
goodness. So with so many bikes having to be moved, I mean, what, use open tray trucks or something or that? I mean, and I'm trying to imagine, did each person have a certain spot or a certain rack each day, or was their bike parked in a different place each night?
The answer is no. They don't really have a parking spot, and except for the HIV positive riders, but they kind of have an area that belongs to them, so they know pretty much where they park. But they don't. They still don't have a parking lot number. They do have the number on the helmet on and also on the bike. So that's the only thing that they can recognize their own bike, of course. But so they don't really have a spot. So each day they their own job is to find their own bike. But we help them by naming the racks with the band's name, like the music band's name. So I will tell them on which band that you park at, but that's how far we can do, because they have to find their own bike every day. But for that special day, we have to literally locate the bike for them with a new system, after the scanning and computerized, whatever you call it. So it was fun to do that. But I mean, because it's
So at the end of it, after 6 days, some $10 million was raised, some 2,300 riders, 500 support people, and this is an annual event. You're now talking about going back and doing this again next year, but as a rider. So what are you doing about that in the meantime?
I'm trying to cycle as much as I can without a bike. So I need to find something I need to work on. It's either I find a really good bike and then use the same bike in the United States, meaning that I will ship the bike along with me when I go, or I find a fairly good one for in Hong Kong to train, and then I ask the local staff in the United States to find a similar, if not the same, kind of bike for me to ride on when I get there. So my goal is to start training before November, at least, quite intensively. And one of the friends who have been riding many years told me that in the first 6 months, the best is that I ride at least 50 miles a week as a training. And then when it comes closer to the event, like 3 months before that, I have to ride about 100 miles each week just to get used to the physical demand.
Where do you ride in Hong Kong? I mean, I'm used to places in the big cities in Australia have usually got bike paths and whatever. Well, some people do ride on the roads as well, but it'd be a bit hairy here, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's true, because in Hong Kong there are not many areas that we can ride cycle very safely. There are some cycling trail in New Territories, but it's not very long, so you can finish it very, very easily. And then, so sometimes I think I need to ride, be cycling on the road, but I won't be riding in the town. It's too dangerous. Mm. And even in the New Territory, because the vehicle people, I mean the drivers are not...
Which area in New Territory? Are we talking to the Sha Tin area?
Sha Tin,
or the Tin
Tai Po, and maybe Sheung Shui too. But yeah, that would be the area. And Yuen Long, it's on the other side of Hong Kong, so it's kind of far, but I may do that too. I may be riding or cycling from Sha Tin to Yuen Long and back and forth.
Is this ride very hilly, or is it relatively flat? In the U.S.?
Hilly, too. And it's all sort of...
It's not just all flat.
Not all flat.
Okay, running out of time, but so you're looking at November-ish to start training, and next year you're going back and you're going to ride with some 2,400, who knows how many, and you've got to raise $3,000 to even be eligible to take part.
Yes. So.
Well, good luck with that, and I hope it goes well. And who knows, maybe I'm back here again August next year and I can talk about your third bungee jump and your taking part in it, so in the bike ride as well. Chung Yu, thank you very much for having
the chat.
Thanks very much. That's Orange Ribbon for another week. My sincere thanks to Chung Yu for taking some time out of his day off. It was actually his day off in Hong Kong just almost 3 weeks ago to allow me to record tonight's interview. Thanks also to Nick here for providing program support on the front desk at Joy Tonight. Coming up next on Joy 94.9 is Simon and Paul with Global Sounds. Thanks for joining me on Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again 7 o'clock next Wednesday with more insights into our GLBTIQ multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. I'm Alan Smales, from me for now. Bye-bye.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.